So yeah, I'm a consultant in the media asset digital preservation metadata field. I've been doing this for quite a long time. But you guys should all introduce yourselves. So what do you guys do?
I'll start first. Sure. So I'm Chris Ramsamy. I'm Director of Digital Asset Operations at Condé Nast. And that's, my group is comprised of digital archivists, asset analysts, and I also wear multiple hats as it relates to the company's rights management system. It can be anything from a little bit of development, business intelligence, multiple hats with that, so.
Hi, I'm Dan Rosenberg. I run the video asset management department at Time Inc. So that encompasses Time, People, Fortune, Money, Sports Illustrated, Essence, Food & Wine, and the list goes on. But we are now a media company, not a magazine company, as I'm sure my colleague at Condé Nast will attest to. And my department is everything from taxonomy, ingest, transcode, archive, and everything in the post-production processes right up into delivery.
I'm Ken Romano, Director of Product at the Associated Press. So when I think of product, I think of getting close to the customer, understanding what they need and delivering it to it, as opposed to what they tell you they want, which is a big difference. And in my role, I'm primarily focused on taking our content and figuring out how to package them into formats that work better on connected devices. So going beyond the newspaper and TV world, thinking about things like voice platforms, OTT, and things like that.
Hi, I'm James Cooney. I'm a director of software engineering at Pearson Education. My background's in media custom application development. I had previously spent 6 years at HBO where I worked on their secure screener system with some of the partners who presented downstairs earlier. And at Pearson, my focus is on engineering for core platforms around content authoring in their next gen media supply chain.
All right, thank you. So I'd like, first of all, to kind of talk about the state of the industry, which is really a problem statement. And the essential problem, I think, is that silos persist. We have all this fantastic new technologies, a lot of which we talked about today. We haven't talked so much about semantic technologies and graph technologies. That's also a player in this space. But I'd just like everyone to give a quick, or everyone who wishes to give a quick summation of what you think primary problems are, or the primary state of the industry is. And I'm going to start with you.
Sure. I think speaking for Condé Nast, for us, change. It's definitely a key word that's happening that someone mentioned earlier today. So the company is constantly changing, shifting, and it's about breaking those silos, which can be very difficult because as we're trying to integrate data, you can imagine some people are very protective over their data. One brand doesn't want another brand to see their data. So I think change and breaking just those silos down is definitely one of the biggest challenges at Condé.
And building off of that, I would definitely agree is the need for flexibility. A lot of the companies that people up here work for are very old companies that have been around the block for a long time, and they have a certain idea of how things should work. And everything's changing so quickly in the landscape that you really have to be able to adapt to the new technologies, new distribution platforms, new challenges with new generations coming in with their ideas.
We're only 171 years old, so I mean. but I, you know, similar lines when I think about our customers there, and we're B2B2C, just like our colleague from TiVo said earlier. When I think about our customers, they're getting bombarded with so many new things that they have to do. And the way I see our role is helping them kind of backfill things. So if a newspaper is all of a sudden going to go into video, they might need us to help them backfill some of that video or backfill some of that text. If a voice platform wants to develop content but they don't have editors, they might rely on us to rank all of the stories and help them determine which are the top stories of the day. And all of those require some level of automation that those customers can tap into our workflow in order to figure out how to automate that.
I think what's pretty common from people saying earlier is sprawl. So sprawl across devices, formats, products, and territories. And in the education space, it's not a direct translation necessarily. So you're not necessarily taking a particular textbook or course and just translating it. You really have to localize it. And the specific technical and business and cultural requirements there really add some challenges.
Yeah, and I think one of the silos you actually see start developing, which is kind of interesting, is between the legacy content, especially with these older companies, and the kind of new sexy data science-y type departments coming in. And that's something you really have to engage with and try to break that down, or else you get this, I don't know, it's a sort of the hoarding, data hoarding going on, and all this sort of parsimonious sharing of data. It's a real, I mean, I would say 80% of any problem is cultural. Like the 20%, the technical is hard, you need to fix it, but it's the people and the leadership which is really what can make or break these things down. So, I mean, maybe there's...
There's, you know, someone alluded earlier to the investment that you need and how to kind of get senior leadership bought in. And that's what we see a ton of. If you're trying to transform your publishing systems, you've probably got about 10 or 15 systems. It's not like you're, and your senior leadership just thinks it's like one blob. So what we found is that we're experimenting a lot and our customers are experimenting a lot. And there's that fine line, that kind of X factor of when do you decide that you have enough information to bring it to leadership and say that we need this giant change, or when do you just keep experimenting a little bit? But what we usually recommend is just kind of dip your toe in the water, take it out of the boardroom, take it out of the 20-person conference room, and just try a couple of new things as a quick swag. And then through that process, you'll kind of learn what new metadata do we need? Do we need to change 10 systems or just two? And it kind of all evolves from there.
Yeah, I think actually doing something is always a good way of starting, right?
Yeah, pilots versus POCs.
Depending if the department likes calling it POCs, and then you can call it a POC, but it means it's if the store is
or prototype. Yeah, we actually have those debates. Which of the three is it?
But these are all the things. This is the cultural part of it. People certain there are bad words. When I was at HBO, we used to joke about having a forbidden word, thesaurus. Like, no, don't say that. Say blah. So, sorry.
I think our bad word at Conde is lawyers, like someone said earlier today. I mean, it's we're straddling both worlds in that we've got legacy systems where some lawyers are very much attached to their data and scared of change. And then at the other side, you've got a new team, our content intelligence team that does machine learning, that is so excited and willing to take our data, our assets, and use it as training sets for their machine learning workflows. And it's hard, you know, dealing with legacy people, new people, and lawyers especially. So
my husband's a lawyer, absolutely. Most problematic group of people. Sorry, that's completely thrown me. Oh yes, what I was going to say is I think one of the interesting things talking about legacy data actually is some of the newer companies, which shall be nameless, they were able to start clean. They were able to start with a clean slate. And I think that's, I'd be interested to see how they're doing in 20 years when they have their own legacy. And they're going to maybe have this negotiation between the older departments and the newer departments and how that's going to work. I think that's going to be an interesting thing to play out over the next you know, little while, decade or so. See where they really, whether that culture persists through.
I think so many of us, you know, Conde and Time and some of the others, we've got those revenue streams that we have to keep running. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just flip something off because, you know, and the new stuff is bringing in money, but not as fast or not as much as the old stuff. So we have those giant business decisions of how much do you continue investing in just keeping the train running versus building out the new stuff.
And well, we were going to talk about rights at the end, but we brought up the lawyers. So maybe we should talk about rights metadata and integrating that specifically, because that's so key to using things. So Dan, I'm going to throw it to you for no good reason. But
sure. well, Time has produced quite a bit of content over the last several decades. And how we control rights, at least from the video side, is to really take it out of the user's hands and automatically apply rights on the way in. And my group is really in charge of ingest of pretty much all of our own content, so we know we own that. But there's really, if there's something we don't know we own, or if there's something we're going to use that we definitely don't own, we give our users very defined lanes by which to get video assets into the system, and they can't use them until they've gone in that way. And if we're applying the rights metadata on the way in, do we own it, do we not? We're really saving the company a lot of money and time based on what they're searching for. And also we can make the lawyers happy because we know we've built in this system that is going to stop us from getting sued. And anytime you bring that into a meeting, like, hey, we know we can use content and nobody's going to get mad at us, that's a good value add right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the appropriate gating with the right systems really helps there. If you know it's only in this system, if you can use it, it makes it a lot more trustworthy and you're able to iterate a lot more quickly.
Condé Nast issues,
though. Yeah, I mean, the last 2 years, two of my team members that are sitting back there, we had a ton of rights data that lived in a ton of databases that was not able to integrate with any system. So that was a challenge in itself, is just corralling all those databases, consolidating, making sure that the lawyers and their team members were okay with us consolidating and not breaking their current process, because they've got a business, they've got to function. So for us, we're looking to the future and trying to figure out how to integrate that with our digital asset management system, and we're getting one step closer. We're very close to it. I think we're a few weeks away from integrating some of that data. So little steps, but huge ones for us.
That's great. Well, actually, that was one of the topics. So what data are you integrating? What integration challenges are you facing right now? I mean, I'll just go down.
Yeah, I think the mix of structured content and what we consider pure metadata is often a challenge. I think there are some technical solutions that help there. Mixed model data stores, we work with Mark Logic, who's here today, and that's part of the solution. It's not the entire solution. I think an area there that also really helps is having useful and business-oriented abstractions. Not everyone needs to know the underlying models for everything, and in fact, they can't know. It's just gonna introduce confusion and errors downstream. So being able to introduce appropriate abstracted endpoints, now whether it's through RESTful APIs or through some other technical mechanism, that allows the joining of the data, I think, to go a lot more smoothly.
Yeah, for us, I mean, related content is a really big thing. Like I said, we've got 171 years of archives in various areas, and we're producing 2,000 stories a day, and that's not even the photos and videos. So how does all of that relate to each other? And not just in a broad sense, you know, this was all about the election, but this was about a specific piece of the election or a specific story arc. That's really gonna help us tailor the content to the way that our customers wanna use them. The other thing that we're hearing a lot of requests for is recommendations on where the content should be used. So if you think of one example, a headline, certain types of headlines work really well on digital. You can imagine a headline as an explainer on John McCain's vote today. You know, this is why John McCain voted the way he did. That would be a good headline. Someone would click on that. But if we're powering a news ticker or we're powering a voice interface, you just want to know exactly what the headline was and the breaking news that happened. So we need to be able to provide ways that can parse it no matter which use case our customer is going to use it for. There's also a lot that we're getting in the voice interface space about family-friendly content. You know, if you're having breakfast at home and your three-year-old daughter is there and you ask for the news, you don't want to hear about how many people died in Aleppo last night. So there's a lot of those additional filters that we need to keep in mind.
I think that points to something that's interesting, which is the blending of what we traditionally think of as metadata and what I would normally differentiate as analytics. I think it's, no pun intended, a little bit of a question of semantics now of which is which, but you really do need that feedback loop of analytic user data coming back into the system, whether it's to train algorithms or even just to give back to the appropriate business units.
And on that, I just said that technology is only 20% of the issue, but of course it's core. So what technologies are people working with? I'm developing an ontology with Viacom right now, so we're looking at semantic technologies. There are various colleagues here, so that's something we're looking at.
So we're using Mark Logic too for our digital archive as well. For rights management, I don't want to talk about the front end, it's kind of embarrassing, as my colleague over there laughs, but our back end SQL. And there's also, some of our contracts and rights are tied to a financial system that's Oracle-based as well. Mm-hmm. So that's more of a legacy system.
Using any identifier systems or any of these other?
There are identifiers in them. Tying them all together is what we're working on, so.
At time, I think we face what could almost be considered a unique challenge in that we have our three main streams of print, photo, and video, video being very much so the new kid on the block. But not only that, we have, you know, right now 25 flagship brands that are doing video and total of about 100 titles all across the world. And it's how are we integrating data not only amongst the different platforms, but amongst the different brands. And you know, we could have, say, like someone in Fortune Video is working on something that someone in Fortune Photo might have some information on, and how are we helping to facilitate that communication. So really coming up with not only a system of record, but a metadata schema that's very easy for a human to read, very easy to parse through. Because if you scare off your users, you know, you've lost your battle already. So I think really making it as human readable as possible and as easily sortable as possible, that certainly encourages cooperation.
And do you worry about rights in that reuse as well, or is that baked into it?
For the most part, we're only working with things we own. On the video side, we are licensing a good bit of B-roll, just because maybe the users couldn't really find something that they think we may have rights to, or they think we may have shot, but you know, it's very easy for someone who doesn't know any better to just say, oh, I'll just go grab it from Getty and we'll pay for it.
Yeah, someone earlier today, I think it was Jeff, mentioned that someone tried licensing something from Getty that they already had at MTV. We've encountered the same thing, where CNA was going to Getty for an image, and it turns out it came from our archive. So it hit home hearing that.
There's also the going to IMDb to get the data that from your own company. So that's I think that's something to deal with. That all these public sources are available. What are the data quality issues around there? Is it just, this is maybe one of the consequences of data hoarding internally, is people end up just doing an end run and going to IMDb, and that's something that has to be engaged with as you try and roll out these various measures. Something I did want to ask everybody about is, have you developed your own metadata schema or specification? Do you have a stewardship program? Where are you on structured versus unstructured data? I don't know if anyone's got stuff into throw into that pot. I know I'm kind of, we didn't discuss this earlier. I'm just throwing it out to you. Sorry, I apologize.
I think maybe just a little interesting is a mix of both. We do have some custom schemas, but are also using Ferber. So,
and we've developed our own custom taxonomy specifically for news, which is available. That, you know, it's got a tagging service that other people can send to us via an API. And we're constantly changing those rules, and we're constantly keeping an eye on who's appearing in the news, and you know, how do we need to tag those? We had an example a couple of weeks ago where a couple of customers had missed Otto Warmbier, the student from Ohio that passed after coming home from North Korea, because it was kind of breaking news. No one necessarily knew that name beforehand. But we had that in our taxonomy, and we're able to kind of find all of the information about him.
And starting from scratch on the video side at Time Inc., we built a custom schema, but we based it off of what was available to us in the photo systems as well as some of the text. So again, what people in the company would be used to seeing, but then making it more rich, because with video, I mean, there's a lot more to an individual asset. So we built a very simple framework, minimum mandatory, a few fields to get in, and then everything else can be enriched afterwards. So that makes it, again, very easy on the users. And when it comes to taxonomy for specific projects, it's something you just have to work with your producers in the pre-production process.
Do you have a specific way of enriching? Because often there is this notion of enriching over time, but depending on the workflow, sometimes that never happens, right? Like, what you get is what you get, and there is no chance to enrich. So have you built specific structures to do that?
Not at Time Inc. at the moment. It's something that, in my past experience at WWE, you can bring in, essentially hire a bunch of loggers to come in and, you know, watch fake fighting all day, and they'll have a great time. But with some of the footage that's maybe less entertaining to a certain segment of workers, it's really something you have to work through management. You tell them, we have all this great footage, but we don't really know what's in it. I have a relatively small team of 7 people who cannot possibly go through all this video, so what do you want to do? Are you gonna hire some college kids to go through this, or are we just gonna let it sit there? And if you really put it in management, and give them the value proposition, hopefully they'll give you the resources you need.
So is anyone using machine learning or any auto-indexing technologies? Or looking
at some point, Digital Archive will integrate with the HAL team that's doing machine learning stuff for that, but I got lucky that when I inherited the Digital Archive, there was a great ontology there already that was built by a bunch of library scientists,
Yay, library scientists.
So we're tweaking it as we go, but mm-hmm. Yeah, that's our hope, is to eventually integrate with some sort of machine learning mm-hmm. that the content intelligence team is working on.
We've experimented with some, particularly on the photo side, with tagging photos. But same thing, we're just kind of experimenting, haven't rolled it out.
It's actually a little bit less of a challenge for us not having like a physical video archive. So it's an area where there's fortunate that there is actually a lot of metadata. So it's really a migration and a handling challenge as opposed to a do you use machine learning, do you hire freelancers question.
Yeah, one of the things that came up earlier, there was a lot of talk about digitization programs like the big MTV Vaults program. And I think because a lot of content now is born digital, so there can also be a disconnect between the workflows or the tagging of the that's tied up to a digitization and then what happens with born digital content. Has anyone encountered any issues there or be able to transfer the model over? Have you worked one way or the other?
So at Conde, our born digital content actually lives in a different CMS and it's not currently being archived yet. That's something that's TBD we're trying to figure out.
And that's quite common, that the born digital stuff is not being archived.
Right, but there's definitely a ton of historical content that actually sits in a cold storage that's still being digitized. So it's definitely a mixture of both.
Almost everything that hits my world is born digital, which is lucky at this point because all our systems are geared to it, but the company does have a surprising amount of tape assets still laying around in various states of storage. Time Inc. has only been very serious in video for a little under a decade now, so most of what was not born digital is pretty well preserved, whether it's interviews with presidents or Sports Illustrated swimsuit stuff. That stuff will eventually make its way towards us because the company certainly wants to monetize it, but most of what we have is born digital.
It wasn't necessarily born digital, but it's been reborn digital subsequently.
Does that mean it's been digitized? Does that mean? Okay, now I'm going through my list. Someone else come up with a question. Okay.
do all of you using SQL technology or NoSQL technology? And the reason I ask this is that by using NoSQL technology, your key value pairs are basically dynamic. So your issue of update is not an issue at all because you just annotate metadata and update it. So there's this tendency to use relational databases when in fact they're just stiff and static. And the other thing you gain is all the open source on things like Elasticsearch, where you have all these big data tools for free. And there's a whole evolving industry there. So.
Yeah, the question was on NoSQL versus SQL and whether we're looking at one or the other. I can say that it's horses for courses, in my opinions. There are some situations where NoSQL is, or not only SQL is what you should say, is it absolutely where you should be going. Other places where SQL is still a perfectly good place, I think you can mix them intelligently. And that's, I'll throw that out to the panel.
Yeah, I think you can make any technology work depending on what your team and your goals are. In my experience, the primary benefit of NoSQL was less around some of what you described and more around time to market considerations and the ability to quickly iterate with development teams, but that may not be true everywhere. At Pearson, we are actually pursuing a mixed model of document stores and RDF graph data. So that's neither are SQL, but it is getting at some of that relational data, but it's pursuing it through predicates in the RDF model as opposed to through SQL.
The system we're working with now is non-SQL, so it moves very fast and it's very easy on the retrieval end. But then what we've run into is the issue with generating metrics and reports. If you don't have the right tool for it or there isn't one built for it, then you're really just essentially using the system's search and filters to generate your metrics and the things you're sending upstairs for people to see. So there's benefits to both, but really it's about, again, what works for you.
SQL.
Our DAM is NoSQL, but our rights management is SQL. Yeah. But I think we've talked about Elastic at some point, so.
And I think that's one of the issues with some of these new technologies is they're fantastic, but they're not so mature. There aren't so many people who know how to do them well. That's going to change over time as more people are trained in those skills and those technologies. But I think resourcing is an ongoing issue. That's another challenge to this. People who are smart about this stuff. There was another question.
Does your organization see you as a cost center, or does it see you as a P&L generating revenue, and you can therefore make your own investment decisions?
Well, I'm a call center because I'm a consultant. But you guys should go.
You know, the wider organization that I sit in, I'm actually not sure.
I'm right there with you.
That's for the larger area. I'm within the specific areas I'm working on, I believe they're considered cost centers. And then historically, I've worked in cost centers, but with chargeback. So you're able to justify your internal costs because the internal business is paying for it.
So as product, I sit within the revenue team, so I'm expected to generate revenue. My colleagues that work directly on our taxonomy and metadata are in our technology organization. What we try to do, though, is anytime we have a revenue-generating project, we try to tie any additional investment to that specific project. So even though they are technology, they are just kind of a cost center, we try to make sure that we're justifying that it's not just we just want to hire a whole bunch of new people or we need a whole bunch of new technology licenses. We try to tie it specifically to the new investments we're making in new revenue streams.
I'm not sure if they know where we sit either, because of right now, we're mostly focused on doing all the tagging and the cataloging for reuse and, you know, monetizing what we already have. But then you get the one or two times a year when something goes terribly wrong, and you get to ride in and save the day. So in that case, you know, we are saving a good bit of the company's assets for them when they thought, hey, this is lost, it's all gone, it's all wasted. But it's, oh no, because we followed all these rules and procedures and put in all this time at the front end, which our users complained about because it took longer on the front end, but now we actually have everything that they thought they lost.
I mean, it's a good question though, because it's one of the challenges is how do you justify this investment, and often it's something like that. Like you have to put a lot of work, and then it'll save your butt. Excuse my, there's gonna be some catastrophic thing that happens. I think it came up earlier with the talk about the Vault project and the celebrity deaths. It took a few celebrity tragic deaths to make people realize the value of having that content already tagged and available and digitized.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely experienced that. We're not a cost center, but we certainly support different brands and teams that make revenue off of our assets, and celebrity deaths is a huge thing for us. Anytime someone big like Prince dies or David Bowie, here comes a special interest publication that is made off of the digital archive assets. So that's how the company is able to obviously make revenue off of older content that they still have rights to.
It's not just, there are often efficiencies involved in this, but they're harder to justify to people. Like you're saying, if you do this now, you pay later. You can try and do it well and efficiently up front, and you're not going to have that mad scramble at the end. You know, it's one of those issues.
So are you able to, over here.
So
are you able then to extend the metadata as part of your digitization efforts? Is that allowed, or can you get at least some minimum viable metadata onto there?
Anyone want to take?
We definitely put metadata on everything, hands down. And that's how we're able to resurface that content for them to make those special interest publications based on metadata, for sure. It could be, yeah, definitely. Even our physical archive team, while we work very close with them, they are constantly adding metadata to historical content because we have pretty world-renowned photographers that did work for Condé years ago, Avedon, Horse, things like that. And that is rich content that you want to monetize, that the world wants to see. So it makes sense to put metadata on there because they're also distributing to other distribution channels, licensing, not just reuse, and any potential products that come out.
Any other questions? I know we're the last thing between you and drinks. Sorry.
Red or white? Sorry. That's terrible.
No, nothing.
Access control to metadata in tabs. Oftentimes it can be different than the access to content itself.
On the topic of access control to metadata on tags, in particular in the world, in a loose schema or NoSQL world, have you run into any problems or had any trepidation around people accessing tags that are potentially private or putting the wrong tag that causes an asset to pop on the front page of a website, for example, incorrectly? And that's I'm wondering if anyone run into this type of problem?
You can. I mean, there are ways of dealing with that. Some of them, you know, access controls, et cetera, and workflows. I don't know if any of you guys have any horror stories you want to
I don't have share. Any horror stories, but just whenever you have integrating system access controls, it's a challenge. It's actually a challenge we're working through a little bit right now. Specifically having metadata systems that can own and understand how they want to manage those rights is what we're pursuing right now. You sometimes run into errors in integrating systems, and I think having a really graceful way to do that, we're still figuring out, but basically saying that there is going to be a core system and core application and product owners who understand how they want to manage rights for the metadata could be one approach.
I mean, I'll follow the ridiculous celebrity death theme of today. Joan Rivers' death. We have certain products and certain fields that are manually filed because, you know, we want to make sure that they're correct. And, you know, the AP believes in its editors. Unfortunately, that day, the editor made a mistake and didn't move the Joan Rivers obituary and breaking news alert into a number of our products. And it came back to bite us a little bit. But for the most part, you know, we try to use that mix of automating some metadata and using machine learning for some metadata, but then at the same time for really, really super important stuff in terms of ranking what are the top five stories in the world at any given time. I can use an algorithm for that, but I trust our editors to do that, and that's where we choose to kind of invest our human resources.
Do you specifically put humans in front of algorithms as a gate, or are you human first with algorithm just as information?
I would say where it depends on the area, we're probably more human first with algorithms as information. But that's in the use case of kind of curating our content for a specific use case for, you know, this would work well on Facebook or on Amazon. And then in other cases where it's just categorically tagging something, that's pretty much all automated.
We can we've got 1 minute left on humans.
I think we got one final question. Hold on, wait for the mic here.
Hi, John Cerconi with SMPTE New York. Just one technical question. How much do you do that's in the cloud versus having your own farm, or where does all this stuff reside technically?
Well, we're in the specific area I work in, we're almost entirely cloud and have a roadmap to be 100% cloud sometime in the next 12 to 18 months. That's not necessarily true across the board. There are still a number of data centers within the larger organization for different use cases. But at least within the area I see, we're on the road to 100% cloud.
What he said.
We're mostly on-prem, actually, right now in New York, because 2 years ago, Time Inc. had no video archive, so now we do. So we started with on-prem, and we should be hybrid on-prem in the cloud by the end of the year, and that will also help us tie together because we have a studio in LA and another one in Birmingham, Alabama, and another one in England. So we'll be looking to tie those all together in the cloud so everybody can access everything everywhere.
I think we're half and half. Some of our older stuff is going to be in the cloud, and then newer content eventually we'll hit the cloud and it'll age out up there.
Yeah, I think everyone's negotiating that breakdown. Just before we finish, I want to quiz you from SMPTE. A major tool in integration is standards, public standards, internal specifications, and I recommend that you all explore what standards are available in whatever space you're in. So it's my boring summation of what you should be looking at. Are we done? We're done.
I think that's it. Great way to end the day. Thank you so much. Awesome, awesome.